We good, Frank? All right, awesome. Thank you. Well, good morning, everyone. As you know, I am not pastor, and I believe they'll be coming back this afternoon. They're on their way. I've heard great things. I'm sure we'll hear plenty more when they return. We're thankful to have the campers back, the youth campers, and appreciate all the work and prayer that went into that. I know I've heard a lot of fun and exciting stories, and it's always good to see enthusiasm, you know, just youthful enthusiasm come from those kids. And Emily's been telling me all about it. It's just nonstop, and it's like, you know, I wish I had that fire, and I hope it continues for them. So if you would, remember to pray for those kids. And I know the teens, they left yesterday, so we've got people all over the world. You know, it's kind of crazy right now. And but I appreciate you being here. It's a smaller crowd than normal, and we have good reasons for that. So pray for those who are traveling and all that's going on there. And I'll remember Daniel, too. Pray for him. He's got a big day. All three services, he'll be teaching something or preaching something. So may the Lord be with him in that. So you got me for Sunday school today. So let's open up our Bibles to Proverbs 31. And I know what you might be thinking. I was thinking the same thing. Who is this part-time preacher coming in, talking Proverbs 31? Going kind of crazy. But hopefully we're going to look at a couple of things the Lord put on my heart that I'd never seen quite from this certain perspective. And this is Sunday school, so we're going to go kind of verse by verse. But it's really going to be topic by topic. And I don't have any real hard bullet points here. We certainly could find them. I've got them in bold on my paper. But really, the overall theme is united in this. And hopefully you can see things from the perspective that the Lord showed me. So looking at Proverbs 31, it's a familiar passage to many for one very specific reason. If we look at verse 10, who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. That's what most people know Proverbs 31 for. The virtuous woman, it goes on to describe through many verses, different things about that woman, different characteristics. A lot of people look at that for wisdom and guidance and seeking out a wife or maybe growing oneself if you are a woman. There's a lot to be learned in that, but I think I may have found another virtuous woman from Proverbs 31, and that's the perspective we want to look at today. So who can find a virtuous woman? Well, I think I have. She's right over there. I married her. I'm happy to be with her, and I can say, yes, the price is above rubies. It cost me diamonds. And if you look, a diamond is about double the price of a ruby, carat for carat. So I did take a look at that. So that verse, it's right. But let's take a look, starting from the beginning in Proverbs 31, verse 1. The words of King Lemuel, the prophecy that his mother taught him. Now the virtuous woman that I want to look at today is that one right there, Lemuel's mother. Now, I never noticed that before. We've always looked through this passage, looking at the woman that's described there, but I want to look at the woman where this wisdom came from. The focus of today will be a mother's wisdom, or wisdom from a mother, and all of the things that we can gather from this certain perspective. Now, I realize not everyone in this room is a mother. We're going to get at a very maximum 50% in any given crowd can be a mother, but we all have a mother, right? So we all can relate to this person. We can all learn something from this perspective. And it was difficult for me to see through the eyes this way, I guess, of a woman. So it's kind of a challenge in perspective, a gender equity. If you want to look at it that way. Is that the first time it's come from this pulpit? But, you know, normally as a man, I'm seeing things through a man's eyes. You see a masculine perspective displayed in much of the Bible. But there's a lot of good stuff that comes from the women and the knowledgeable and virtuous women of the Bible. And a couple of important ones, Ruth and Esther, right? But we can learn things from the harlot at the well. We can learn things from Rahab. And we can learn things from somebody right here in this passage. So let's take a look at what this woman had to teach her son. So perspectives from a mother, wisdom from a mother. So verse number two, what my son, and what the son of my womb, and what the son of my vows. Well, we're just establishing the relationship there between mother and son. It's deep, right? It is deep. The son of my womb, the son of my vows. How much deeper can it get? These are the most important things. This is flesh of her flesh. This is born of her relationships. So it is a deep wisdom. It comes from deep within her. It's strong. It's powerful. It's something that she cares very deeply about. And going on, what she wants to tell him here in verses 3 and 4, give not thy strength unto women, nor thy ways to that which destroyeth kings. She goes on to say, it is not for kings, O Lemuel. Remember, he was a king, verse 1. It is not for kings to drink strong wine, nor for princes strong drink, lest they drink and forget the law and pervert the judgment of any of the afflicted. So point number one, if you would have it here, she tried to protect him from learning the hard way. Now that's something that a mother is really good at, right? They're always seeing a kid's going to go this way. Oh, don't touch the hot stove. Oh, don't put that knife down. You're going to cut a finger off. It's constant when you have kids. I got four of them on my own. I know. I watch this happen. And for me, as a dad, kind of hands off. I'm like, yeah, you know, what's the worst that's going to happen? They pick up a knife. Are they really going to cut their finger off? No. We can handle a little blood. But a mom, she's going to try to protect that kid from learning things the hard way. And I think about simple things, like crossing the street. You know, kid, boom, they're just going to walk right out into there. They're not going to look. They have no idea what's going on. I got a lot of kids in my neighborhood. We kind of have this cut off. There's no way, there's only one way in and out of my neighborhood. And so the kids kind of roam freely. And there's kids going all over the place. You come into my neighborhood, you come up, you come around this little bit of a curve, and then watch out. They're everywhere. And they've got hoverboards, and they got scooters, and they got bikes, and they're moving, and they're not looking. So we try to teach our kids these things because they don't know the dangers that they face, right? They don't know the dangers of giving their strength unto women. Think about King Ahab, for example. Did he know what he was doing with Jezebel? Did he know what kind of power she had over him? Now, I don't know. I'm not going to go deep into what they had going on there, but there's many examples of that over and over throughout the Bible, of a king giving his strength unto women. Now, a man and a woman are supposed to be bonded together in a certain relationship, and it's supposed to work a certain way. But what happens when King David ventured up to the rooftop and saw something he shouldn't see? What happened to his strength then? How did he forget the law and pervert his judgment and things like that? Or even Solomon himself. How many wives? How many concubines? What did they do in the end? Right? 1 Kings 11. They perverted his judgment. They turned his heart away from his God and towards other things. So a man can get trapped, a king and a man and our children can get trapped up in things that they don't understand and that they can't control. And a mother's wisdom is going to try to keep that child protected from the things they don't know. So simple things like crossing the street. Just you tell the kid over and over, stop, look both ways. But how hard it is, how tempting it is to just keep going when you got up to that full speed of 8 miles an hour on the hoverboard, you know, and you've got to just tilt back a little bit. Why do you want to do that? You want to go forward. You're going to keep going. But you never know when the car might be there. So as a mother, isn't it reassuring or isn't it refreshing when you see that child stop and actually do it? It's kind of cool. Evan, my crazy one, actually does probably the best out of all of them, I would say, at stopping. You know, I wouldn't think that. He's kind of just lollygagging through life, not really paying attention. But we try to instill those things in our children, and it's a special perspective that a mother can bring. I think from my own experience and work. If you don't know, I sell paint for a living. I do all things paint. I get paid to watch paint dry. I kid you not. And to tell people how they did it wrong or what they're doing right. And I think of an example of a wet paint sign. So at Benjamin Moore, we give these out for free. It's wet paint, you know, it's got don't touch on it. And they often use these in facilities for freshly painted surfaces. You put this wet paint sign on there. You know what people do time after time? Do they heed the warning? No! Come up, there's a fingerprint right in there. Is it really wet? Has that been on there for 3 days, do you think? You know, where does that curiosity come in? It says wet paint. Why do you care if it's dry? But you got to know, because it says wet. Is it true? Did they forget to take it off? No. Mind your own business, right? But no, it's challenging. It's little things in life that you don't always know the consequences. And a mother can really help you through those things, as she did here in this passage. So let's continue on. I'm not going to go, my goal here, if you noticed, isn't to go deep into alcohol. It's not to go deep into the virtuous woman of Proverbs 31. We can get bogged down in a whole different study there. But just high-level stuff, wisdom from a mother. So, continuing on, verse 7, we probably will read through the whole thing by the end of this. Let him drink and forget his poverty and remember his misery no more. So, she's telling him, look, that's for somebody else. That's not for you. Other people are going to do that. You don't know the dangers in that. And by the time you get into that particular thing, those particular things, it's going to be too late. It's going to be too late. These are things you don't want to find out for yourself. You want your mother to have told you. And she will try her best to do that. Continuing on in verse 8. Open thy mouth for the dumb, in the cause of all such as are appointed to destruction. Open thy mouth, judge righteously, and plead the cause of the poor and needy. Point number 2 here that I found. The mother will teach you not to be selfish, right? Selfish. Twice there it says, open thy mouth for somebody else. So kids, naturally selfish, right? I think in my own home, the simplest of things, like a seating arrangement. So I have 4 kids. Jen lives with us as well. So there's 7 people in our house. We've got a dinner table that seats 7. Enough seats for everyone, right? But I tell you what, every dinner time, it's a fight. Whether we do assigned seating, where everybody has their own spot every time, or whether we give it a free-for-all, there's always a fight. Well, I don't want to sit by him. He's with his mouth open, you know? Or I don't want to sit here. The sun's in my eyes. Or I had to sit next to Dad last time. You know? It's constant. Kids, they start out selfish. Look right over there, 6 seats in a row, 6 people in my family. How hard should it be? They're all comfortable, yet continually fighting to get their place, wherever it might be, whatever they want in that moment. It's selfishness. It comes with everyone, right? It's in all of us. And it doesn't stop when you're a kid either, does it? No, it doesn't. You know, think about the seats. Who wants the middle seat on an airplane, right? I know. I will book early to make sure I don't get the middle seat. You know, you might have somebody that smells. You might have somebody touch you. Or even worse, they might talk to you, right? That's the very worst thing that can happen on an airplane. For me, anyway. I don't want to talk to a stranger. But even in the bigger, you know, even as you get older, meaningless things somehow take on meaning when selfishness is involved. And the middle seat, who cares? We're all going the same place. Only the person in front of you is going to get there faster. You're all going to arrive basically the same time. Get over it. But it extends far beyond that. And the mother here in this passage wants to go further than that. It's not only don't think about yourself, it's make sure you're advocating for others. And we got to be careful in that, because it's real easy to think, okay, I'm being neutral, right? I'm being neutral. I'm not putting anyone behind me. I'm not trying to get first place in line, but are you actively looking for somebody else that might need a little help? Are you actively looking? Are you pleading the cause of the poor and needy? So this is an active instruction here from this mother. Twice, open thy mouth. Because not only do we as selfish humans like to get first place, the second best thing is to not have to do anything at all, right? If you don't have to do anything at all, you don't have to face it. Okay, yep, I'm going to just pass by that one. I'm not going to look at it, because then I might have to do something, right? I'm just going to, okay, that guy's lying. He's hurt. He's in the road. I'm going to just walk around over here. How many did that before the Good Samaritan stopped to help, right? That's the next worst thing you can do to try and to further your own self-interests is to ignore the interests of others. We're supposed to pursue every man another's treasure, every man another's wealth. We're supposed to look out for each other and put each other first. So I can say recently, if you don't know, we lost our minivan. It's been out of commission for several weeks, and it's been interesting to see and just a blessing to see others step up to help. People you wouldn't expect in our family have offered things. Friends have graciously offered to help. People have been helping. Jen's been taking kids here so we can all come to church. I don't have a vehicle that can fit my whole family. But in little things like that, can you help out a brother? You know, can you help out a sister? We do that often when somebody has a baby. Example, Naomi just had a baby. Congratulations, by the way. And it's Jake's baby, too. But she had it. So, but, you know, little things like bringing meals to the couple is of great help. But that's when it's scheduled and it's convenient and it's easy to slip in there. Oh, and it's recognized. People see you doing it. And you're a part of something. But have you thought about doing something when nobody else is looking? Are you actively opening your mouth for the dumb, for the poor and needy? Are you pleading their cause and also judging righteously? Are you thinking about how these people can be helped? And I don't want to go into any specifics because it's how the Lord's going to lead you in these things. And it's going to be different for each one of us what we are called to do. And maybe it's something in your personal life. Maybe it's something in your Christian life. Maybe we need to step up into a certain role. Maybe it is ministering at a nursing home. I really think that's cool that we have those opportunities in our church to help people. I think about many of the stories that my wife brings home from work. And she's a registered nurse. She sees a lot of people at their very worst. And it's really heartening to hear how certain people can help at a time when somebody's hurting. So, second point there is, she taught him not to be selfish, and she taught him to plead the cause of others. A couple other verses here to look at along those same lines. Proverbs 29:7, it's not far over. We can take a peek. 29 verse 7, the righteous considereth the cause of the poor, but the wicked regardeth not to know it, right? Considereth the cause of the poor, but just like we said, the wicked just, no, not even gonna think about that. Because if it enters into my mind, then I gotta do something about it. That's gonna weigh on my heart. I don't wanna let that in. That's a lot of work. It's easier just to, somebody else will take care of it, right? It's so much easier to go that route. Proverbs 21:13, and I could go on and on verses from this in the New Testament alone, but throughout Proverbs, there's a bunch. We're just going to look at this last one here. 21, verse 13, whoso stoppeth his ears at the cry of the poor, he also shall cry himself, but shall not be heard. Well, if you are still selfish after this last point, there's the verse for you, because someday you're going to need help, right? We're all going to need help someday. Because someday you're going to be in that position yourself. You know, we're all going to end up at one time or another in a spot where we need help. And if you need the selfish motivation, boom, there it is. But what the mother, Lemuel's mother, teaches us is to be proactive in these things, to look out for the younger ones, to look out for the needy ones, and to not consider just our own cause so much. So, continuing on, let's see, we ended. Let's look at verse 10. Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. Now, I'm going to go through, I don't want to get, like I said, deep into this, but let's skim through some of it here. Verse 12, she will do him good, talking about her husband, and not evil all the days of her life. She seeketh wool and flax and worketh willingly with her hands. She is like the merchant's ships. She bringeth her food from afar. She riseth Also, while it is yet night, and giveth meat to her household and a portion to her maidens, she considereth the field and buyeth it, and the fruit of her hand she planteth the vineyard. She girdeth her loins with strength and strengtheneth her arms. She perceiveth that her merchandise is good. Her candle goeth out, or goeth not out by night. She layeth her hands to the spindle, and her hands hold the distaff. She stretcheth out her hand to the poor. Yea, she reacheth forth her hands to the needy. I think we've seen enough. She's a busy woman. So, from the perspective here of King Lemuel, what is his mother trying to show him? She's trying to show him what to look for in life's partnerships. Because, verse 30, favor is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. Now, when you're young and you're male, beauty is important. Let's say that. You don't know a whole lot, right? When you're young, you don't know a ton. You don't know what's going on in life. You know, you've maybe lived 18 or 20 years. You have no idea what it's like to be 30 or 40 or any of the things you're going to face, or what it's like to be with somebody for 5 years or 10 years or maybe longer and longer and longer. You don't know the things that you're going to face. You just know that, hey, she's pretty good looking. She kind of likes me. You know what? Let's talk, you know? That's where it starts. But a mother's going to watch out for you. She's going to say, look, there's a lot more to looks, because one day his hair's going to fall out, you know? One day hers is going to turn gray. One day the muscles that were up here are going to start sagging lower and lower on him. And it's going to start, you know? It happens, right? We don't stay the same throughout our lives. We all change, because favor is deceitful. A mom is going to look, or is going to teach you to look long term, to look at the things that really matter in your partnerships. And I don't use partnerships in the sense of the equity thing again, but you'll see why I choose that word. She's looking what you should look for in a spouse, right? But you think about all of the other things that are long term in your life too. What do you look for when you're buying a car? Huh? You want the shiny paint. You want the sunroof, you know, you want leather seats. Yeah, you want deceitful favor, right? That's kind of what you're looking for. When you're shopping around, you're saying, okay, do I like this color? Do I like how it fits? Take a picture so I know what I look like in it, you know? Let's put that on Instagram. That's what we're after. It goes through many different things in life. It's not just in relationships, but your mom's going to teach you, okay, 3 years from now, you spent however much money. You got the, you know, the limited package. You were very happy with that. Yep, you're still paying $850 a month. You haven't paid it off yet because you did the seven-year loan, because that's how it would have, you could afford it. And now it broke. Now what, right? Now how is that favor deceitful? Now how is that beauty vain? It ends up in a lot of things in life. How many of you have been burned on something like that, right? You know, you bought something think is the greatest thing. Take an iPhone, for example. Mine's over there. It's off. But, you know, this thing is great. You know, I got the dual cameras. I can take Zoom. I can do still motion videos where it's like slow-mo and that stops and the guy's head turns and goes back. Like, you can do stuff like that. But in the end, when your kid takes it, flushes it down the toilet, you know, what did it become, right? You know, it's really exciting for a moment. But let's look long term. Your mother's going to teach you that beauty is vain. You got to look deeper. And aren't we called as Christ's bride to look longer term as well? You see, not just in your own spouse, in your own new car purchase, or whatever gadget you might be desiring today, but think about a new Christian. When you got saved, or you ever see somebody or witness somebody get saved in actually a close part of their life, isn't it exciting at first? You get kind of on fire, but what happens over time? Well, life sets in. It gets tough. Isn't it sad how even as Christians, our salvation becomes that way? It slows down. It shouldn't. But if you're doing it right, if you're seeking the Lord for the right things, if you're giving Him the right things, it doesn't have to be. See, that's the partnerships come in. This can translate to many different things. If you got a long-term view of things, if you're looking for the right way to see and the right way to work in these relationships, these partnerships, you can have a much more fulfilling and fruitful life, right? So the mother will teach you what to look for in life's partnerships, because you might be looking at something else. Also, in those passages, in that those same set of verses, my next point here, she taught him that the right way of life is hard work. So, verses 10 through 31, 21 verses. I counted, now this is not scientific, this isn't about numbers, I counted 21 different active verbs that woman is doing. And number of these verses have none. So some of these verses, there are two or three active verbs. Now, you could might come up with your own number depending on what you consider. Some of the time she's not doing something, not letting her fire go out or something like that. You know, there's other things that she's not doing as well. But there are 21 different actions that this woman is taking. That is a busy, busy life. And I stopped to think, okay, I think I'm pretty good. All right, I got up this morning. I made breakfast for a couple of kids, prepared my sermon, drove the car. Okay, how meaningless do my actions become when you start numbering them, right? They're pointless, many of the things we do in life, not the things that this woman's doing. So your mom's going to teach you that the value of hard work is important. It's not, you know, the things that she's doing are important. They impart value in of themselves, but being active, being involved, doing something, doing the right things are important too. Think back on your own life, in your own marriage, in your own partnerships. How active are you? And it's like, 21, can I think of 21 things that I've done for my marriage? Like, done for my marriage. I don't know. I'm scared to sit down and do that. But there are a lot of activities. And the Bible says a few things about action and inaction. Let's take a look at Ecclesiastes 10, since it's nearby. Ecclesiastes 10, 18. All right, men. By much slothfulness the building decayeth, and through idleness of the hands the house droppeth through. It takes active work just to maintain your household, right? It takes a lot of active work. And going further beyond that, we have to be careful of the things that we say. Let's look at Matthew 12, 36. Matthew 12, 36. But I say unto you that every idle word that man shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. Being idle is not thought of very highly in the Bible. The verses go on and on and on and on from there. And the opposite of the virtuous woman is shown in 1 Timothy 5:13. And withal, they learned to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but tattlers also and busybodies, speaking things which they ought not. You see, idleness will get you in trouble. Mom's going to tell you, get to work. Get to work. There's a lot to be done in a Christian household. There's a lot to be done to maintain that household and the relationships in it. There's a lot to be done to uphold that household. There's a lot to be done here in the church. There's a lot to be done in your work environment. There's a lot of things that you can apply there. And again, I don't want to get bogged down into the specifics of it. Otherwise, we could dive a lot deeper. But there's a lot of meaning in the things that this woman's doing, the specifics of what she's actually doing. She's tending to her household. She's tending to the needs of others, not just her household. She's tending to the things of, in some cases, local politics and what her husband might be involved in. She's tending to a lot of different aspects of life. Now, it's easy to focus in and say, you know what, I'm going to be the best mother, the best father that I'm going to be. What about all those other things? It's hard enough just to carry on one thing, right? It's hard enough just to carry on your Christian life or your married life or your fatherhood or motherhood life or whatever life it might be. It's hard enough just to go to work every day, right? Maintain your testimony there. It's hard enough just to get up in the morning sometimes. But look, we're called to do all those things. We're called to be busy, and we're called to do it for Christ, not just for ourselves. So Lemuel's mother certainly taught him that he should be busy, that we should be busy. Beyond that, we'll take a look at a couple more verses. My next point here, she taught him how to treat his wife and lead his family. Now, verses 10 through 31 are often kind of the cornerstone of the virtuous woman. But there's actually, I see at least four different things in there that talk about the man. So, husbands, do you desire a virtuous woman? Let's see if you meet these qualifications. Verse 11, the heart of her husband doth safely trust in her. Do you trust in your spouse? You see, a relationship is a two-way street. And I'm married. I know the struggles. Even if you're not married, you have relationships. And they're always difficult. It's work to maintain one long-term. But the heart of her husband doth safely trust in her. That's a two-way street. You see, he trusts her, and she's trustworthy. It has to go both ways. Now, this is first and foremost. This is verse 11. This all started in verse 10. We're only on verse 11. It's kind of foundational that you have trust, right? This is Lemuel's mother saying, look, this is a two-way street. You can't expect verses 10 through 31 out of her if you don't even trust her. You have to put your faith and trust in her and let her know that. You have to work together through things. Are you not telling her something because you don't think she can handle it? Do you think it's not right time? What are you doing that's not trusting her? I've done that before. I'm like, oh, I don't know if I want to tell her this because she's going to get upset. Not anything bad, but you know, you try to protect sometimes. Sometimes that protection, for me, gets in the way of trust. I don't know what it is for you, but her husband safely trusts in her. Let's keep going, verse 23. Keep looking at her husband. Her husband is known in the gates. Ooh, when he sitteth among the elders of the land. Huh, that's a pretty high bar. Yeah, you want the virtuous woman, guys, but what are you doing? You know, that to me is a political position. He's known in the gates among the elders of the land. Now, I'm not going to advocate for or against politics. There's some, I think, good positions a man could hold. I think a big part of why we see what we, this is me speaking, why we see what we see in this world is because there aren't any Christians in positions of leadership, right? But this woman's husband was known in the gates. He sat among the elders of the land. You see, he was busy working in that respect as well. He was outside of the home. He didn't just focus on ruling his house well. He was trying to take his talents and apply them elsewhere. He was outwardly focused, not just on his own possessions. He took that wisdom of not being selfish and applied it and used it to help others in the community. Now, I don't know the context of this. This is Old Testament. You got to understand what it means to sit in the gate. That was a pretty prominent place. That was the highest honor in the city outside of a king or a ruler that way. When you sit among the elders, it was a very respected position. And now in any given organization or anywhere, there's only so many positions of that. But what are you doing to try to help others, to apply your talents in other ways? Think about that one, men. Okay, verse 28, let's keep looking. Her children arise up and call her blessed. We like that verse. That's printed on a little plaque that we gave my mom for Mother's Day several years ago. But let's keep reading. Her husband also what? Arise up and call her blessed. Oh, and he praiseth her. Okay. That shouldn't be so hard, right? Yeah, you know, dinner was great tonight. I know you were tired. I really appreciate you making that. You knew it was my favorite, even though you didn't want to. looking her in the eye. Thank you. How hard is that? It's really hard. Why? Because I forget. You know? You don't think about it. But again, this is active working. So, men, all right, what are you doing to say thank you? What are you doing to tell her that she's doing a great job? What are you doing to notice the things? You know, every once in a while, she'll put on a new dress that she bought. Didn't notice it was new. Doesn't go well. You know, it happens. But what are you doing to try to notice those things? Are you actively trying to help her, to promote her, to thank her, and to let her know how blessed she is? Because sometimes it's not easy to see. When we all work hard, we do, but a mother has a special place, a unique labor, I think, and it's monotonous in many cases. It goes on, and everybody's hungry again. They're asking for that again. You know, all right, we tucked them in last night. I got one that has a hard time falling asleep, and it's like at 8 o'clock, we're all just tense. You know, we're tense because we know she's not going to go to sleep. She's going to be in and out of our room, and it just goes on and on and on. And it's real easy just to treat it as, yep, that's her job. She's got this. I do my job, she'll do her job. Well, it's not quite that simple. You know, we all need a little respect. We all need a little bit of praise. We all need to understand just how blessed we are, because it's so easy to forget in the mundaneness of life. But so what else is this guy doing? Verse 31, give her of the fruit of her hands, and let her own works praise her in the gates. So we're back to the gates again, which is interesting. We're back in the community. So give her of the fruit of her hands. She's working hard. She deserves some good things. She needs to deserve some of the fruits of her labor just as much as we all do, but her especially, for some of those things, that the unique challenges that she faces. So, guys, don't forget. It's just a friendly reminder, you know. The price is above rubies, but you can find something. I'm sure you'll find something. But give her of the fruit of her hands. You see, there's four right there active things that husband ought to be doing too. 1 Peter 3:7 says, likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the weaker vessel, as being heirs together of the grace of life. Giving honor. Why? Because she's earned it. She deserves it. She works hard too. And it's real easy to say, yeah, well, I, you know, this is my house, and look at how far we've come, and look at our kids, and like, you did that? Yeah, uh-huh. Okay. You're in this together. You are heirs together of the grace of life. We got to treat it like that. And it's easy to forget that giving honor is an active verb, giving. You actually have to do something. Some verbs like is are inactive. You don't really have to do anything because it already is. This one requires action. She's working really hard through this passage in the chapter. Make sure we are too. Right, men? All right. So she taught him how to treat his wife and lead his family subtly. I thought that was interesting. I don't know if subtly is the right word, because somebody talked about subtlety in the Bible not that long ago. But she did it not in the way that I would. Say, hey, listen up. Make sure you don't forget about her. That's how the dad would do it. You know, moms, they're a little bit softer approach to it. And they're heavy in their own way. Those are no light things. Those are things that take a lot of work. And the end of verse 31 there, let her own works praise her in the gates. Well, he's already in the gates. He's already there. I think he's supposed to be doing something while he's there. He needs to be promoting her, talking about her, saying, hey, we're in this together. This is us in the community. Not just being that standalone guy, but remembering his family and the work that it takes to get where we all want to be. So she taught him how to treat his wife and lead his family. Now, the next couple things here aren't directly in the passage, but things that I kind of saw from this, which was kind of neat. Let's go back to the very beginning. chapter, yeah, still in 31, verse 1, the words of King Lemuel, the prophecy that his mother taught him. Now, King Lemuel, if you look him up, you're not going to find anything. We don't actually know who this guy is. I don't know if any of you have dug into it before. It gets kind of controversial if you go online. So I started out with the concordance. Okay, Lemuel shows up twice in the Bible, verse 1, verse 4. That's it. That's all you get. Okay, there's your context. So who is Lemuel? Well, I don't know. Is he Agur from the chapter before? Well, I don't think so, because Agur says in verse 2 of 30, "Surely I am more brutish than any man and have not the understanding of a man." That doesn't sound like this guy. Some say that he might be Solomon or Hezekiah. Well, I don't know. The Jewish tradition, I guess, teaches that this is Solomon, that Agur as well is also Solomon. The scholars say many different things and have basically no evidence to support it. So whoever this Lemuel is, we don't really know. But what I think is cool about this is this word right here. The words of King Lemuel, the prophecy... Oh, the words of King Lemuel, the words of King Lemuel. Now, these are his words. It's his mother's prophecy, right, that she taught him, but they became his words. She did her job right. She actually got through to him. She actually got it in there. Now, this isn't King Lemuel's mom writing this. No, this is his words. He took ownership of them. Now, isn't that what we want as parents, to have our kids take ownership of the things that you teach them? That is the ultimate goal. You want, as they grow older, to have their faith become theirs. Not it be your faith that they're living out with you, but have their faith be their own, that they take their own steps going forward, that the things that you taught them, they teach to others. How cool is that? This woman was successful in the ultimate. And I get to see this in little ways every once in a while, and it's just so awesome to see when, you know, you'll be in a store sometime, and I forget where we were. It was hilarious. And I was with Evan, and he goes like this. "What are you doing, buddy?" "There's bad music." "Where?" "Oh, yeah, it's playing overhead." "You're right. I had no idea. I didn't even hear it." But he noticed it. I never taught him that song. He never heard it before. Never heard it in his life. But he knew instantly. A lot of times it's quiet enough to where you don't really know what's going on unless you know the song. But he instantly recognized that he should not be listening to that. It was really cool. My daughters, too, when we go out, they're really good at this. And now they're getting a little too far, and they do it just to get attention now. But they notice when people aren't dressed modestly. And it's everywhere, right? You know, and I was, "Look at her. I don't want to look at her. Do that to me. Leave me alone. I know." But it's like, they'll do that. They'll point it out. But you know what? They're noticing it. They're taking these things that we tried to teach them. They're taking it inside themselves and bringing it home and making it theirs. You see, the mother in Proverbs 31 succeeded. And she succeeded with her wisdom in getting it to become Lemuel's wisdom. And that's what we all want. And that's a key takeaway, is it's one thing to instruct. It's one thing to read something in the Bible. It's one thing to listen to what we're saying here today. And it's another thing to take it home and change your life. And it's another thing to any message, to anything that you hear from this pulpit, from the Bible itself, and to apply it and make it yours. Right? That's a very important lesson that you get very subtly in verse number 1. Almost hidden. It took me a while. I read that verse, I can't tell you how many times, in preparation for this, and it hit me just yesterday, last night. I'm like, wow, you know what? Those are his words. He made them his own. And another thing that I saw here that I thought was really neat is she ultimately shows the righteousness of Christ in all of this. And I started digging into individual verses to parallel this, and didn't think I'd have time to go into it, in which we don't, but beware of the evils of the world, love one another, marriage is sacred, Christians ought to be doing something, and faith is personal. Go read the Sermon on the Mount, right? You can get it all right there in Proverbs 31. Before the Bible was even printed, this woman had it. Before the New Testament ever came to be, this woman understood it. She summed up what Christ's ministry was. It was to impart wisdom. It was to impart love and understanding and compassion and all of these things to others and then send them forth into this world to make disciples of others and to continue on that wisdom and that, I hate to say tradition, but to continue on that that way, to continue as followers of Christ. And the entire New Testament is revealed through men. Yeah, we have a woman right here that had it too. So make sure that we're all working together, that the Bible isn't gender specific. Yeah, it's masculine in the way it's presented, but everyone here has the responsibility to understand these things, to communicate these things, to make them their own. And she ultimately showed the righteousness of Christ before Christ was even here, which I thought was pretty profound. And it's cool because the Bible is layered that way, right? And sometimes you got to peel back those layers and you start to see these themes come through over and over and over again, which is why we in this room know that this is holy, that this is trustworthy. You're not going to find that anywhere else. But as you start peeling these things back, you can boil it down to some pretty simple things, but very difficult things still. And my final point for you here today, reading again verse 1, the words of King Lemuel, the prophecy that his mother taught him. We don't know who Lemuel is, but we certainly don't know who his mother is. And I think that's one of the superpowers of mothers, is they do all of this without recognition a lot of times. It's a thankless job of self-sacrifice, being a mother. And we don't even know who she is. We don't know her name. We don't know anything about her. We don't know if she acted like this. We don't know where she learned these things. But she did the right thing in imparting them to her son and in providing this wisdom for all of us going forward. So, as I said, I think that's part of the mother's superpower. You know, a guy, you know, I tell you some advice, I want you to know it came from me. She don't care. She just wants to do the right thing, right? You want to make sure that the right things get passed on for the right reasons. It wasn't about her. She put it all there for his sake, for King Lemuel's sake. And ultimately, you can apply this forward for Christ's sake, right? Amen? So there it is today. Hopefully you see a little different perspective on Proverbs 31. I certainly saw something new that I'd never seen before, and it was interesting to see it through different eyes. So thank you for joining me today. Let's pray and we'll be dismissed. Now, Father, we